Before I forget, I've been asked to announce, in case anyone's not aware, today is the official beginning of Chaturmasi of Vrata. And this month is a fast from shak, from green leafy vegetables. Okay. Text number 23. Na tvam dvijo tamakpulam yadi hatma gopam. Gopta vrishak swarhanena sanusurmitena. Taryeva nangshyati shivastava deva panta. Loko grahishyad vishabhasya hi tat pramarnam. Matajis? No? Na, not. Twam, you. Dwija, of the twice born. Uttamakulam, the highest class. Yadi, if. Ha, indeed. Atma gopam, worthy to be protected by you. Gopta, the protector. Vrishaha, the best. Suarhanena, by worship. Sasunvitena, along with mild words. Tarhi, then. Eva, certainly. Namshyati, will be lost. Shivaha, auspicious. Tava, your. Deva, O Lord, Pantaha, the path, Lokaha, the people in general, Agrahishyat, would accept, Rishabhasya, of the best, he, because, Pramanam, authority. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. O Lord, you are the protector of the highest of the twice born. If you do not protect them by offering worship and mild words, then certainly the auspicious path of worship will be rejected by people in general, who act on the strength and authority of your lordship. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita it is stated by the Lord himself that the acts and character of great authorities are followed by people in general. Leaders of ideal character are therefore needed in society. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appeared in this material world just to show the example of perfect authority. And people have to follow his path. The Vedic injunction is that one cannot understand the absolute truth simply by mental speculation or logical argument. One has to follow the authorities. Mahajano yenagatak sapanta. Great authorities should be followed. Otherwise, if we simply depend on the scriptures, we are sometimes misled by rascals, or else we cannot understand or follow the different spiritual injunctions. The best path is to follow the authorities. The four Brahmana sages stated that Krishna is naturally the protector of the cows and Brahmanas. Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha. When Krishna was on this planet, he set a practical example. He was a coward boy, and he was very respectful to the Brahmanas and devotees. It is also affirmed herein that the Brahmanas are the best of the twice born. Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas are all twice born, but the Brahmanas are the best. When there is a fight between two persons, each of them protects the upper part of his body, the head, the arms, and the belly. Similarly, for the actual advancement of human civilization, the best part of the social body, namely the Brahmanas, the Kshatriyas, and the Vaishyas, the intelligent class of men, the military class, and the mercantile men, should be given special protection. They should be worshipped. When their protection is performed, it is just like worshipping God. That is not exactly protection. It is a duty. One should worship the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas by offering them all kinds of endowments and sweet words. And if one has no means to offer anything, he must at least use sweet words to pacify them. The Lord personally exhibited this behavior toward the Kumaras. If this system is not introduced by the leaders, then human civilization will be lost. When there is no protection and special treatment for persons who are devotees of the Lord, who are highly intelligent in spiritual life, then the whole society is lost. The word Namshyati indicates that such a civilization becomes spoiled and is annihilated. The kind of civilization recommended is called Deva Panta, which means the royal road of the demigods. Demigods are supposed to be fully fixed in devotional service or Krishna consciousness. That is the auspicious path that should be protected. If the authorities or the leaders of society do not give special respect to the Brahmins and Vaishnavas and do not offer them not only sweet words, but all facilities, then the path of progress will be lost to human civilization. The Lord personally wanted to teach this, and therefore he offered so much praise to the Kumaras. Natvam dvijotamakulam yadir ihatmagopam gopta vrishak swarhanena susunvitena taryeva nankshyati shivas tavadeva panta loko grahishya dvishabhasya hitat pramanam. Here, the Supreme Lord Narayan is expressing his opinions about the respect and worship that is due to the Brahmanas, to the members of the highest of the social classes, Dvijottama, the best of the twice born. In the opinion expressed here of Lord Narayan, they are to be worshipped. This is not Narayan talking, excuse me. This is the Kumaras speaking to Narayan. This is their realization of his attitude. But they're understanding what his attitude is. that he considers it necessary to set an example for the living beings by himself honoring and worshiping the Brahmins, because it's required that the Brahmins be respected and served and maintained. For human civilization to actually be civilized, that is required. The Kumaras are speaking this. They're offering prayers to Lord Narayan. The circumstances are unusual. First of all, the Kumaras were not, as everybody generally understands, were not pure devotees of the Lord before they met him on this occasion. They came to Vaikuntha on a whim. They are empowered yogis. They're famous as yogis, more or less impersonalist yogis. They live on Tapoloka, the Kumara brothers. They, as residents of these of the higher planet, Tapoloka, they're free to travel everywhere. Even they were able to enter Vaikuntha. They were just coming just to see. They weren't intending to make this their permanent residence or to establish any particular relationship with the Supreme Lord, who is the Lord of Vaikuntha. They just came in their wanderings. No one stopped them, so they entered Vaikuntha. But someone did try to stop them. The last of the gatekeepers at the last of the seven gates, Jayan Vijaya. And there was the encounter where the four Kumaras cursed the gatekeepers. So here they are. When they finally meet Lord Narayan actually came to the spot where they had cursed the gatekeepers, Jayan Vijaya. He walked there on his own feet because he considered that his servants, Jayan Vijaya, had committed the offense. And that because his servants had offended these Brahmins, he was himself, Narayan, felt himself responsible for what his servants had done. So he came, in effect, to apologize to the four Kumaras. Rather than they having to enter his palace, he came out to meet them. And, as it's described here in the third canto, in the last chapter, when the four brothers came into personal contact with the Supreme Lord, when they simply smelled the tulsi leaves placed on the feet of Lord Narayan, their minds became completely transformed. And they at once became pure devotees and felt and began to express their actual devotion and attachment to him. So here, they're offering their prayers. The first devotional sentiments they ever expressed, they ever felt. They've just become devotees. Now they're offering their prayers to Lord Narayan. They're expecting that Narayan has come there to punish them for their offense against his servants. And they're surprised that to the contrary, he's trying to apologize to them. And amazed by that, they're offering this prayer. They're trying to understand philosophically how the Supreme Lord can subordinate himself to ordinary Brahmins like themselves. Now they understood that all their lives they had been impersonalists, practicing yoga just for the powers to be obtained from that practice. Now they understood that an ordinary Brahmin is not as great as a pure Vaishnava. And still, even though they were just Brahmins, Lord Narayan is coming to offer his apologies to them. So they're trying to understand philosophically how this is so. Why does the Supreme Lord act like this? And their proposition here is that it's for the purpose of setting an example for human society who need the guidance and support of the Brahmins. Human civilization is not possible without Brahminical culture. Brahminical culture is the keystone of the Varnashram social system. So in effect, that means that without the Varnashram social system, there is no real human civilization. People have to honor the Brahmins, they have to serve the Brahmins, supply whatever they require. Prabhupada uses the word endowments here. In modern English, it's usually a term used in academic circles, that someone gives a large amount of money to an academic institution that can be kept in the bank, and the interest on that large amount of money can be used to, say, hire a special professor. That's called an endowed chair. But in general, the word endowment means a gift. So, not only is there obligatory service to the Brahmins, but you should go out of your way to give them gifts beyond what's prescribed. You should volunteer to offer them services and even wealth and property. Brahmins should be supported freely. They shouldn't have to work for a living. They should be able to live just on the gifts that are given to them by the rest of the people. So the Supreme Lord is setting this example. That's only part of it, though. Brahmins should be worshipped, they should be honored, they should be given gifts, and they should be listened to and followed. They're the teachers of human society. Then you can have an actual civilization, according to the Vedic standard. Prabhupada in the purport talks about the necessity to follow authorities. Prabhupada says the Vedic injunction is that one cannot understand the absolute truth simply by mental speculation or logical argument. So, the Brahmins are supposed to be the spiritual authorities. They're supposed to know what the Vedas, what the Shastras are actually teaching. And they're supposed to be able to explain to human society, to people, to their students, to their congregations, what the Vedas expect of them. This is the function of the Brahmins. So the Brahmins are the means by which people can actually understand the desires of the Supreme Lord as expressed through the Vedic injunctions. It's required. No conditioned soul is capable of rediscovering the absolute truth on his own. We require expert guidance. Just like sick people usually cannot cure themselves, they have to go to professional doctors and take treatment. Similarly, we have to go to professional spiritual teachers, the Brahmins and the pure Vaishnavas, to be able to properly understand the absolute truth and how to revive our relationship with the absolute truth. Krishna explains in the Gita, Naham prakashat sarvasya yogamaya samavritaha loko yamnabi janati mudho yamnabi janati loko mam. Was it, what's the first word? Avyayam. What's the word before avyayam? Loko mam datta. Okay. Ajam avyayam, yeah. So, you can translate, it's ambiguous. Naham prakashak sarvasya. In English, it's also ambiguous. I'm not revealed to everybody. That can mean that it's not everybody that I'm revealed to. I'm revealed to some. Or it can mean I'm not revealed to anybody. I'm not revealed to everybody. It can be taken either way. In general, Krishna isn't revealing himself to hardly anybody in this world. So we can take it in the more strict sense, that Krishna hides himself from practically everybody. Only because people don't want to see him in this world. They came to this world to be without him. Just like a husband and wife, they break away from the parents and set up their own household. They want privacy. They don't want their mothers, fathers, in-laws with them all the time. They don't want to see them. Similarly, we've broken away from Krishna. We've set up our own household in this material world, and we don't want to see him around. So he is simply obliging with our desire not to reveal himself. We don't want you around here. So Krishna obliges by not revealing himself to anybody. Although he's omnipresent, he is everywhere. He is here. But his material energy, his yogamaya, covers him so we cannot see him. And therefore, everybody in this world is deluded. Basically everybody. They don't recognize, they don't see, they don't even acknowledge the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was unborn and, Prabhupada translates, infallible. Vyaya means to expend something, to use something up. In astrology, the 11th house or the 12th house? 11th house is the house of vyaya, or expense. 10th house is the house of labha, gain, profit. But the opposite side of that is expense. You gain assets and then you also use them up. That is called vyaya. Avyaya is that which can't be used up. The Supreme Lord is not an object of anybody's exploitation. He can't be used. And so he can't be used up. He's never depleted, because he's never anybody's object of exploitation. We, in this world, we don't recognize that he's even there, that he even exists. What to speak that he's present right here with us, in our hearts, and pervading everything. We're ignorant of that. Now, we may get the inkling of an idea that we want to revive our spiritual consciousness. But on our own, we cannot rediscover the Supreme Lord. We're all deluded. We're covered by the material modes, by lust, envy, and greed. Krishna says two verses later, Icha dvesha samuttena dvandva mohena bharata sarva bhutani sammoham sarga yanti parantapa. Everybody who's born into this world is influenced by the material impulses of attraction and repulsion, by the material modes of passion, goodness, and ignorance. So everybody is born into confusion, into delusion. Yesham tvantagatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvandva moha nirmukta bhajanti mam dridavrata. Only those few who become free from all sins, all improper activities and attitudes, and who behave correctly, punyakritam, they can transcend these dualities and confusions of material consciousness, and again revive their intense devotion to the Supreme Lord. Bhajanti mam dridavrata. They can, with determination, practice the service of the Supreme Lord. but only if they become free of all their misgivings and their misbehavior. That is not possible without proper spiritual guidance. There's nobody in this world who's capable of doing it on his own. Trying to do it on one's own means to resort to mental speculation and logical argument, which Prabhupada says one cannot understand the absolute truth simply by mental speculation or logical argument. In the can't remember which Upanishad, there's a very famous verse. We know the second half of the verse that Prabhupada quotes. The first half of the verse is also there. Pariksha lokan karmachitan brahmano nirvedam ayat nastya kritak kritena. A person who is a brahmana, which is properly understood as someone who has a broad angle of vision, broad consciousness, a person who can see beyond the petty day-to-day existence of material life. When he observes the limits of material success, Pariksha lokam karmachitan, he sees all the destinations, all the achievements that can be gained by material work. He sees that they're all temporary and limited. Nirvedamayat, using his own intelligence, such a broad-minded person should give up his interest in material activities. That much a person can accomplish on his own, using his intelligence, to become disgusted with material life or disinterested in it, simply by understanding philosophically that the happiness and success that you can achieve in material life is all temporary and limited. By experiencing such and seeing it in the lives of others and knowing the history of the human race, how it's always been like that, that no one's ever completely happy, no one's success is ever permanent. So, nirvedamayat, he should realize, nasti akritak kritena. Real success should be permanent. Our real home must be a permanent, eternal place. This is called akrita, that which is not created. I am a living soul, I'm not created. The place where I reside should be also eternal. If I'm eternal, I should live in an eternal place, and the conditions of my life should be eternal. That much an intelligent Brahman can realize, even without guidance from anybody else. Nasti akritat kritena. You cannot achieve the uncreated permanent by ordinary material work, which is just the permutation of things that are created. You cannot achieve the uncreated by the created. You can't achieve real success in life just by material endeavors. What should a Brahman then do, having realized that? Anybody know what the second half of the verse is? Tavigyanartam sagurum evabhigachet samitpani shrotriyam brahmanishtam. That's the second half of the verse. Having realized that, he should approach a proper spiritual master. Gurum evabhigachet. And he should approach in the proper way, exhibiting the proper attitude, and he should approach the right kind of spiritual authority. His qualification, the student's qualification, samitpani, he should approach humbly. Figuratively it said, samitpani, he's holding kindling wood in his hands. If someone came to the Vaishnav nowadays holding kindling wood, it wouldn't be considered very useful. What am I going to do with the kindling wood? Yeah. But in ancient times, the business of the gurus in their ashrams was largely centered around the performance of ritual Vedic sacrifices. So when a new student came, symbolically he should be carrying the kindling wood to indicate to the teacher that I'm here to become your assistant, your servant. And then you might want to teach me something, because I'm taking the role of your servant. I'm here ready to do service. Not just to use you, to squeeze your brain to get some knowledge, but I'm first of all here to be your servant. And then, Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam are the qualifications of the teacher. He should be learned in the scriptures. Shrotriyam. Shrotriya is somebody who is steeped in the Shruti. He should be perfectly learned in Vedic knowledge. And he should not only have this book knowledge, but he should actually be a devotee of the Supreme. Brahmanishtam. That's the qualification of a spiritual master. Not that he's God or equal to God by his personal powers. The Mayavadis talk about Satguru, perfect guru. Prabhupada never used that term, almost never used that terminology, Satguru. He always said, in English, he always said bona fide spiritual master. There's a difference in the terms. Difference of meaning. The idea of Satguru is a guru who's perfect, like God is perfect. And you can consider him God literally. That's what the Mayavadis do. But the idea of bona fide is different. The Latin term bona fide literally means in good faith. It's a legal term. When two people enter into a contract, and there's some circumstance by which the person who promised to do something in the contract is not able to because of unusual circumstances. In court, he can argue that I entered the contract in good faith. It was just the circumstance that I wasn't able to fulfill the terms. That's called bona fide, in good faith. A contract was entered into in good faith. Even if it wasn't literally followed, the person's not to be blamed. So a spiritual master, Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur introduced this term, bona fide or bona fide spiritual master. That means he's acting in good faith. His qualification is his faith, his honesty, and his devotion and dedication to his gurus and to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because he's a honest and faithful representative of the Supreme, therefore he's an authentic, bona fide spiritual master. One should approach such a person. Brahmins should be respected, should be maintained. But when you find a pure devotee who is free from envy and fully devoted to Krishna, that's the person you should surrender your life to and make him the person who guides your life. That's required, especially in Kali Yuga, when the Vedic system of social order has disintegrated, where the world is degrading into chaos. The only hope to revive any kind of human civilization is to have the guidance of pure devotees. So, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave the idea to his son that we have to revive the Daivi Varnashram. Not just the external rules and regulations. Not just the authority of the ordinary Brahmins. But we need a social system that's led by pure devotees. That's the only hope to regain any order in human civilization in Kali Yuga. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya says, Kale kale nahi kon dharma, Vaishnava shastra ek kohe marma. In this Kali Yuga, there is no maintenance, there's no foundation for religion, for civilized life, dharma. all that we have that we can depend on in Kali Yuga are the Vaishnavas and the Vaishnav Shastra, the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavad Dhamma. Our lives have to be founded on the guidance that we can receive from the person Bhagavat and the book Bhagavat. Otherwise we cannot even be civilized human beings. And we can have no hope to make this world civilized again. So this is how we can understand the prayer being offered here by the Kumaras. They're talking in general about respect and service and following of the Brahmins. But we should understand that in Kali Yuga, there is no Brahminical culture without pure Krishna consciousness. Okay, Hare Krishna. Janasnika. Thank you. Okay. It's the support that a Brahmin needs. Brahmins are self-dependent, self-reliant. They don't need much from other people. They don't need lots of wealth and property like Kshatriyas do. They don't need power. They don't need rule over anything. They don't need to be controlling anything, the Brahmins. They can have nothing material and manage. But they do need to be respected. If a Brahmin's word is ignored, then he's powerless. The power of a Brahmin is the power of his word. So it's one thing that you honor the Brahmin, you bow down to him, you give him a flower garland, maybe you give him some money. That's very nice. But the real service of the Brahmin is to listen to what he has to say and take it seriously. That's support to the Brahmins, to listen to them. Ultimately, you know, the real support and service and honor to the Brahmins is to listen to them. When they're listened to, then they thrive. Then they can do their work. So the Supreme Lord sets that example. He listens to the Brahmins. He's going to listen to the four Kumaras. He's listening to them right now, and he's going to take seriously what they say. And does that answer it? Okay. Yes, and the way in which, the form in which that respect should take, what's appropriate service and honor to Brahmins, appropriate protection of Brahmins. Brahmins don't need physical protection. They need simply to have their opinions respected, that's all. And to be allowed to maintain their independence. Yes. Yes. says. Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes. Well, I see it in my own life. You know, I can do what I want because I have rich friends, but I don't know if I can tell everybody else, you do that too. You know, you just don't make any endeavor to make money and some rich person will come and give you money. I can't promise that. Well, I worked for the BBT for 30 years. Do that and then you might get something. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I had the idea in my head to try to teach something. I didn't clearly understand what to teach and how. But yes, it was, you know, the desire, you know, Krishna gave, through these devotees, Krishna gave the opportunity to do it, yeah. Well, I can add one example that it can work like that, but I can't just tell everybody else, you know, put aside all endeavors to support yourself and just hope it'll fall from the sky. Yeah, if you really want to be a Brahmin, that's it. You don't even think about making money. It just comes. Okay. Yes, yes.
That comes as its own free will. It has to be inspired and comes in the form of that. So, when Prabhupada initially set up the Gurukula system, in his quotes, I remember the letter to Jayakirtha, Prabhupada said, you know, that the brahmacharis and sannyasis shouldn't be taxed. Temples shouldn't be taxed. Because there has to be responsibility.
Yes. 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 Yes.
And that
standard is fully Brahminical. But that's the actual Brahminical standard. Is it that education shouldn't be charged for.
So then the idea that on the most of your religion that you didn't see that the culture was ready for that.
Yes.
In ample respect.
Yes. Yes.
But ultimately, as the society evolves, closer to the
Yes. Yes. But even in ancient times, there were paid teachers. And the brahmanas, you know, the portion of the Vedas that explain how to perform rituals, the term upadhyaya is there. That means a paid teacher, a teacher who works for pay, you know, takes a fee. So that's there also, but he's a second-class teacher. First-class teacher is acharya, who doesn't charge. So there's scope for paid education also in the Vedic system, but it's less brahminical. And in the modern complicated world, what we require is several different systems of education. It's different systems. Pure brahminical education isn't going to serve the needs of all the devotees and their children. It isn't. Not for the foreseeable future. It should also be there. There should be an example, a model of it. It's for somebody, but it's not. That kind of pure, perfect brahminical education is not suitable for everybody in the modern age. Yes. Oh, okay. Thank you. Now that's about what I understand about it. As a gift rather than as a purchased commodity. Yes. Yeah. He is, yeah, and therefore he's a second class teacher. That's why it's upadhyaya. Upa means secondary. Yeah. More or less, yeah. I'm sorry, there was a hand here. Sure. Thank you. Oh, yeah, you can read in the ancient texts, the brahmanas, so many arguments, debates, and then, you know, it turns into fights and cursing. You know, one Brahmin curses that, you know, if you're not right, may your head fall off. And, you know, yeah, so Brahmins have to get together and have meetings. It's called, I was thinking Russian, Sabha. The Russian word Sabrania, but Sabha. That means when there isn't one authority, one Brahmin who everybody will listen to, when you don't have such a perfect authority, then the Brahmins have to come together and talk it out and come to a consensus. Yes, yes. Negotiation. But, you know, sit together and come to an agreement. Because there will be so many different opinions. When you have people with big heads have a lot of ideas, that they usually disagree about everything. Yes. Yes. 40 days. Wow. Okay. I never heard that, but okay. Then when the king has a big problem, he calls the Brahmins, but then he usually gives them 40 days to come up with an answer. So that it takes that much time to discuss. No, I don't think they fast. Yes. he's a Brahmin, but he's not the purest Brahmin. Now, a teacher should be a Brahmin. He should live according to each, follow Brahminical principles. But we know some Brahmins, in Kali Yuga especially, emergency situation is Brahmins sometimes have to work to make money. So these Upajayas, they work under the Acharyas. The Acharyas are the principal teachers, and they may have some paid assistants who are also Brahmins, but they're lesser authorities. Okay. Mukti Mandap. That's the ancient system. So Jagannath, if you didn't hear, Jagannath Temple, there's a raised area called the Mukti Mandap, where when there's a big question, the Brahmins come together, they sit down and discuss it and figure it out. Okay. It would probably be a email conference. But yes. MuktiMandap.com. Yeah. Hare Krishna. Yes, Mother? Well, it's hard to say. I mean, yeah, that's pretty much what the Mayavadis mean by it. Yes. Yes, but that's qualified. Kintu Baborya Priya Ivatasya. He's equal to Krishna because he's a very dear servant of Krishna. Mayavadis don't understand that. They take, they think that a liberated soul is Narayan, is God. So when they go to a guru, they think they've already got God when they have the guru. They think the guru is God. Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu, Guru, what is it? Guru Shiva Maheshwara. That's I think that's Shankaracharya's verse. We sometimes quote it, Prabhupada didn't quote it very much. He quoted the other verse from the same prayer, Om Agyanati Mirandasya. But the Mayavadis like to quote that all the time. The Guru is Brahma, he's Vishnu, he's Shiva, he's the Supreme Lord. Well, that's the way Prabhupada always talked about it, bona fide Guru. And Sadguru? But Prabhupada never talked about Sadguru. I think we should avoid the terminology. A bona fide guru is as good as Krishna. He's better than Krishna. If you had Krishna right here with you, what would you do with him? You can't. You don't know how to relate to Krishna. But a representative of Krishna in a human body, who's living in your times, that person you can relate to. So guru's better than Krishna for practical purposes. Okay, call him Satguru if you want. I never heard that term, such shisha, a real shisha. A shisha should be faithful. The proper character adjective for student is sushrushu and shraddhadana. He's eager to hear, eager to serve. That's sushrushu. And shraddhadana, he's faithful. So a faithful, obedient disciple. We don't say a perfect disciple. We say a faithful and obedient disciple. Okay. Yeah. You could say Shraddhavan or something, to trace where Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati got that from. Because Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati coined the term, the usage of the term bona fide for spiritual master. Where in Shastra he picked that up from, I can't say. In ISKCON, yeah. We don't even think what it means. Yeah. Well, that would be a little hard to trace it back to. I mean, we can look in the Oxford English Unabridged Dictionary and see what bona fide means. But if to trace back where it may have come from Sanskrit, from the Shastra, I don't know. Yeah, maybe. It's something that, but I think it's, we'd have to dig deep to find that fact. Yeah. Okay. We can look into it and see. Generally, Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, they didn't coin terms that weren't coming from the Shastra, weren't based on this. So where does this come from? I can't say. Maybe we can discover. Okay, anything else? Yes or no? Sangha. So we had to go. How do you get the Brahmas together in one place? Vrindavan or Mayapur. Okay. Yeah, I'm not an organizer, though. Yeah, I can work on the idea, but someone has to organize it. That's not Sangha. If we do it, electronically, it's not Sangha. Okay. All right. So I have to. This can be the room right here. All right. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.